Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
This is the Honey Badger. Watch it run in slow motion. It's pretty bad. Look, it runs all over the place. Whoa, watch out, says that bird. Ew, it's got a snake. Oh, it's chasing a jackal. Oh my gosh. Oh, the Honey Badgers are just crazy. The honey badger has been referred to by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most fearless animal in all of the animal kingdom. It really doesn't give a shit. If it's hungry, it's hungry. Ew, what's that in its mouth? Oh, it's got a cobra? Oh, it runs backwards? Now watch this. Look, a snake's up in the tree. Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a shit. It just takes what it wants. Whenever it's hungry, it just, ew, and it eats snakes? Oh my god, watch it dig. Look at that digging. The honey badger is really pretty bad. They have no regard for any other animal whatsoever. Look, and it's just grunting and, ew, eating snakes. Ew, what's that, a mouse? Oh, that's nasty. Oh, they're so nasty.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine will. Good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Right.
Beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in the city of Chicago. We are in the beautiful center on Halsted, and because it's Pride Day. And later in the day, I'm going, well, first of all, we have the Mike Novak Show here, and for 2 hours we'll do our usual thing on environment and gardening and green living and whatever, and then take an hour break. You'll hear Meet the Press. And then the second annual broadcast of the Pride Parade, which has a new route today. And Marshall Stern will be here and Heather Fry will be here. And we're going to have a bunch of guests. Stephanie Miller will be with us today. And we will be broadcasting 3 hours of the Pride Parade. And if you're coming out, well, we need to know, first of all, whether it's going to rain. Rick DeMaio will talk to us at 9:45 and let us know that. It's going to be right now. It's gorgeous. The sun is shining in our eyes. And one of the people, the person that I have with me here in the studio overlooking Halsted. Is it Halsted Avenue or Halsted Street?
It's Street. Yeah.
Is Deborah Shore, who's commissioner from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. Deborah, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to be here with you.
And I'm delighted to have you here. And it's an honor. And, of course, you're going to be walking in the parade today.
I am. I have an entry. We'll be pushing some decorated rain barrels down the street and waving to the enthusiastic crowds. And it'll be a great day.
Yeah. How many rain barrels do you have with you?
We have 5. They're all painted by different artists. They can hold 55 gallons of rain if they're attached to a downspout. Today they're not full because we're going to be pushing them on some wheeled skids, but to show people what an artful and fun thing it can be to conserve water.
And last year you only had 2 rain barrels. And now you're moving up in the world. How
They're
many
becoming more
year?
Popular, right. Well, if I could get enough people, we'll push 20. We'll be the rolling thunder.
Just to let folks know, in the second hour also, Wes King, Policy Director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, is going to be here. One of the things we're going to talk about is the 2012 Farm Bill wending its way through Congress, which is really important. I imagine you're keeping your eye on that too, Deborah.
A little bit.
I mean, the thing about it, it just went had a vote in the Senate, and in one day they voted on 73 amendments. And that just is—that's just the tip of the iceberg. It just gives you an idea of how complex this is. And if folks can't completely grasp it, I don't blame them. You know, it's—I don't think the legislators get all of what's in there. And so you have all these different interest groups fighting for pieces of that pie, including environmentalists, including foodies, people who are interested in the safety net. For Americans, and it's now headed to the House, and anything can happen there. Because those people are crazy. I don't know what to tell you, but the House of Representatives, who knows what's going on there. So anyway, Wes King will be here in the second hour, and we will talk about the farm bill. But getting back to rain barrels. I mean, this is, it seems to me, I was thinking about having you on the show, and I have Deborah Shore, who is a commissioner from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. Many of you have no idea what that is all about, and yet you have more than a billion dollar budget. In a few sentences, why is the MWRD so important?
Well, the MWRD, which was founded in 1889 as the Chicago Sanitary District, had as its principal mission, and still has today, the mission of protecting the drinking water supply for Chicago and the rest of Cook County by keeping raw sewage out of Lake Michigan, the source of our drinking water. And that was done in the late 1800s by digging the sanitary and ship canal and building a lock at the mouth of the Chicago River and using water from the lake to flush our sewage downstream and away from the lake. Subsequently, the agency built sewage treatment plants, so now we treat sewage, but it's discharged down the system of Chicago waterways, the treated wastewater, and ends up in the Gulf of Mexico. We don't put it back in the lake. So the principal mission for more than 100 years has been to protect the drinking water by keeping sewage out of the lake.
And now we're talking about the possibility of reversing the reverse. I mean, do those discussions come up now? What is the NWRD saying about it? Are you guys talking about it right now?
Well, the Water Reclamation District also has authority for stormwater management for Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
And the system of plumbing in Chicago and the suburbs was built and designed to send our sewage downstream and to have combined sewer overflows when there's too much rain in Chicago and 50 of the older suburbs. Those will overflow into the waterways. So when the discussions have arisen about separating the Lake Michigan watershed from the Mississippi once again to prevent the passage of invasive species, the Water Reclamation District's principal concern is not to have flooding throughout the city and suburbs. So any solution that's reached has to address how we manage stormwater and flooding.
We've boxed ourselves in here. We've got a very difficult question, wanting to turn nature back to what it was doing originally. And yet, as you point out, that creates all kinds of other problems and other issues, mainly because a huge metropolitan area has sprung up this way. And the invasive species thing is a terribly serious problem. I saw a report from the Natural Resources Defense Council just the other day saying that they've found more Asian carp DNA in the waterway. But that's not really your purview, is it?
Well, it's ironic because the Water Reclamation District, again, when it dug the sanitary ship canal to deal with the problem of contaminated drinking water, and it was a marvelously effective solution, and I would suggest allowed Chicago to become a great metropolis because people could move to this teeming city and have safe, secure drinking water. But that, in turn, created several other problems, and one was it created this passageway between the two watersheds that didn't exist in nature. So today we're dealing with the consequences of that, mm-hmm. that invasive species can move in both directions from Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, from the Mississippi to the Great Lakes, through this artificial conduit that we built to protect our drinking water supply. We can engineer our way out of almost anything. I think the question is, at what cost and what might be the unintended consequences of doing so?
Well, we're always dealing with unintended consequences. I mean, who could have imagined Asian carp and you know, flying fish that will knock you out of a boat if you happen to be on the river, you know, 100 years ago when we were reversing the flow of the river. But there they are.
Well, and that's just it, Mike. You know, when this system was devised, they were doing the best they knew at the time. There was no Environmental Protection Agency in 1889. There was no requirement to conduct an environmental impact analysis. I don't think we really even understood how ecosystems worked. Now we know more, and we get to ask, how do we apply our knowledge today to solve our problems?
But it's not just the knowledge. It's the political will. It is coming to a consensus that is an informed consensus, not based on opinion, but based on science. And you know how hard that is. I mean, talking about climate change alone, we've gone from a place where we used to approach this in terms of our political process, in terms of science. What's the best science? Now it's who can buy the largest bullhorn and scare people the most so they get their way. How do we overcome that in our political process? I'm sorry, I just dropped the whole Magilla on you here, but that's part of our problem.
Well, I think we need leaders who aren't afraid to talk with people about values, about costs and benefits, and be candid and forthright that we can't have everything we want, and we need to make some choices, informed choices. And I agree with you. I think our decisions ought to be based on sound science and not on sentiment, but people vote with their guts, not with their brains.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to appeal to people's values and vision for the places they want to live.
That's Deborah Shore, who is the one of the commissioners of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. She's going to be sitting around the first hour here, and we're talking about water issues. You're welcome to call 773-763-9278 is our telephone number, or tweet us at Mike Now, or send me a message on Facebook. We're all hooked up here. I'm at the center on Halsted and overlooking the parade route where people are already beginning to gather. I mean, they want to get the barriers just got put up. And, you know, as I was coming in here, I was thinking, well, this is so far it's a great day, unless you happen to have parked on Addison. I saw the tow trucks just hauling cars away left and right. I thought, oh, my, I'm glad I didn't do that. And then I looked at the barriers right below us. They've got some planters there, and they've got these little plastic barriers. I saw what happened last year. They do not hold out people. Those plants are goners. There will be some plant damage here.
Well, we have a lot to celebrate this year, Mike, in the LGBT community. A lot of progress made, and I think there'll be hundreds of thousands of people out today to be celebrating and enthusiastic and enjoying themselves.
Well, since you brought that up, you're a member of the LGBT community, and in terms of Illinois, one of its most famous members. And what I would ask you in terms of making progress, what's it like being a politician? And has that changed since 2006 when you were first running for office?
Mike, because I ran countywide in Cook County, my sexual orientation wasn't an issue. People were more concerned about the agency and my conservation credentials, frankly, and what I could bring to it and the ideas I had. And I think in many urban areas, it's not an issue. That's not the case in some smaller towns and more rural parts of this state and our country. But interestingly, since civil unions was passed in Illinois and went into effect June 1st a year ago, I believe that couples have registered in every county in the state and more than 2,000 in Cook County alone. And that's a positive thing.
It is. It's very positive. And it's amazing that it's been a year now in the state. And now, and I believe we're going to discuss this later when we do the Pride broadcast starting at noon, Marshall and I are going to be talking about a lawsuit to bring marriage equality in the state of Illinois. Let's take it a step past the civil union. And that's interesting. And I suppose if it's going to happen in any state, Illinois would be a good one for that to happen.
Well, some states have different language in their constitutions, but I think if you conduct a thought experiment and ask why should the only reason to deny these civil rights to same-sex couples is because of their sexual orientation, then we shouldn't have the engine of government pushing discrimination.
All right, we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, I want to get back into the environmental matters. And you brought up yourself, I was thinking that you're an environmentalist. That's your background. And of all the offices I can think of that can use an environmentalist, MWRD commissioner is almost the perfect one, because that's basically what you're dealing with all the time. Water issues and environmental issues, and it seems like a perfect fit. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the primary and the upcoming election. And again, you're welcome to call if you're listening, 773-763-9278, or tweet. We've got some tweets out there. Go to Facebook. A podcast of the show are available. I'm hoping I can get to it by the end of the day. It's going to be a long day today. And of course, streaming live on Chicago's Progressive Talk. You can also find that link on MikeNovak.net, and I hope that you will go there. Now, here's something of interest from a new sponsor. It's Back to Nature. No, I know you what you're thinking. You're thinking Cotton Burr Compost. No, this is a different Back to Nature, where they offer health and beauty products for a better way of life. Marson and Christina Hench would like to invite you to the grand reopening of the Back to Nature Health and Beauty Store in Wheeling. The construction is finally over at the new Fresh Farms Plaza at Dundee Road in Milwaukee Avenue, and the Back to Nature store is now bigger and better than ever. They offer a great variety of the best natural vitamins and minerals, as well as natural cosmetics, sports nutrients, supplements for men, women, and children, heck, even for your pets. They also have books on natural health solutions and a very knowledgeable staff at each of their 8 stores in the Chicagoland area. But be sure to stop by the grand reopening of their Back to Nature store in Wheeling, located at 259 East Dundee Road, in the Fresh Farms Plaza, next to Great Clips Barbershop, right behind Chase Bank. You'll love the great selection and friendly staff. And their motto is, be healthy, stay healthy, with Back to Nature.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? Plant Skid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, Plant Skid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, Plant Skid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. Plant Skid is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why Plant Skid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed, or your money back.
Plant Skid. That's spelled Plant, S-K-Y-D-D. Plant Skid. Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
I keep telling you that there's something crazy going on in the middle of Chicago at 2200 West Grand Avenue, to be precise. Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center. Just in time for the 4th of July, you can take advantage of some great sales. From now through the 4th, all flats are buy two, get one free. That gives you a chance to go lush in your garden. All potted annuals are buy two, get one free in all sizes. Get rid of that tired stuff and bring in defunct, bring in defresh. Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center has thousands of new potted things, and their annual baskets, which are normally $19.99, are just $15.99. And if you buy two, you get one free, so it's a double discount. Store manager Keith Halverson says the new hardy hibiscus, you know, the ones with the dinner plate-sized flowers that come back every year in your garden, are the best he's ever seen. Visit Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color just in time for the 4th of July. Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're broadcasting live today from the Center on Halsted in anticipation of the Pride Parade, and that broadcast starts at noon, and Marshall Stern from Awakened America and I will be here in the booth watching the parade go by. Heather Fry will be down on the street. We're going to have lots of guests. I hope Christy Weber is going to be here. She's scheduled to help us with the broadcast, Deborah Shore. And you know Christy.
I do. She's doing great work.
She is doing great work. And, you know, she's a great sponsor of the show. But her being here today has nothing to do with that. It's because she's so much fun. She's just... as you said, a pistol. You know, she is. And she knows it. And the problem is, I heard she threw her back out the other day. You know, when you're in the landscaping business, and she's so hands-on.
She totally is.
She's like, she doesn't, like, point and tell people what to do. She's out there lifting and moving stuff around, and I've watched her do it many times, and I hope she's okay. So I'm hoping that everything will be fine. And she's going to be here with her partner, Jennifer Rule. And that's just part of the fun we're going to have during the broadcast. I understand we have a call. And my thanks to Dennis on the other end at the studio. And Dennis, if you're ready, let's bring in Dave from Madison. Dave, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, Mike, and hey, Deb. Mike, you always have great people on the show. I wish I was there being able to watch the parade, and but I'll listen through your show. Hey, Mike, comment on the water quality issue is something that I've been noticing and dealing with up here is the unbelievable failure to enforce construction erosion standards. whether I went back when I was a visiting professor at Northern Illinois University, we had to get a program shut down where they had Route 30 crossing the south branch of the Kishwaukee. I mean, they had bulldozers in the water. It is consistent around the Chicago area to see this half-baked attempt to what I would call that grudging pro forma compliance with the best management practices. And those BMPs don't always work either. So it's an easy, fairly low-cost way to address some of these pollution problems that the citizens can do. So I'm wondering what Deb had thought about that.
Dave, thank you, and that's an excellent point you're making. The Water Reclamation District has a draft watershed management ordinance, essentially a stormwater ordinance, that we are seeking to adopt that will apply to suburban Cook County, because currently there's no overarching set of standards that applies throughout the county to all the municipalities, and there are 126 municipalities in Cook County. These would set minimum standards for parcels of a certain size for development or redevelopment, so it won't apply to everybody, but it's a good start to try to improve water quality in streams, reduce stream bank erosion, and manage stormwater more as a resource and not as a problem. My hope is we'll be taking that up this fall and seeking to adopt it.
That's fantastic. I would just add, you know, if you want to come up here and see the failure of stormwater, come to the Madison Lakes. It's the only watershed in the country with a human death from blue-green algae. It is, we lose dogs.
Really? I didn't.
Yep.
I didn't know that, Dave. When did that happen?
This was about 7 years ago. It was a 17-year-old high school student from the town I live here in Monona. In the middle of the night, him and his friend were out goofing around in one of the little ponds at the headwaters of Lake Wingra, which is part of the Yahara River, which then eventually flows to your neck of the woods down in Illinois. He took a couple gulps and was dead within 24 hours. And as someone who worked with the folks down at Illinois in the 80s working on these chemicals, blue-green algae chemicals, it was clear what it was. And that's the only one that we know of. We just had two girls die of drowning down in Lake Caganza, one of the worst blue-green algae blooms that we've had for a long time. And these can be serious human health hazards. Madison has really, you know, it's a great city. Water quality and polluted runoff control is a disaster. You can go on the web. You can look at videos. It has to be. The rules are critical. Enforcement is essential. So you guys are great.
Dave,
love you. Have a great day.
Okay, well, Dave, I always appreciate you calling in. Thanks for listening in Madison, Wisconsin. Deb?
Well, and I think Dave's point about enforcement is absolutely key, because construction outfits will get a permit and they say they're going to put up barriers to reduce runoff, but unless there's enforcement, it doesn't have real meaning. Mm-hmm. And that's currently, I believe, the responsibility of individual municipalities, but that's where citizens and residents banding together, taking pictures, pressuring their elected officials, pressuring the departments that have this enforcement authority can make a difference.
Yeah, the citizen cooperation and citizen observation is key, but unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't even know what they're supposed to be looking for. In terms of these issues, and they're going to easily be strong-armed by companies who say, "Oh no, we got it under control. Don't worry. You know, we do this all the time," and that's part of what happens. Let's get to another issue here, which is a success story for you since you came into office in 2006, and that's disinfection of the Chicago River, which was a very interesting story, because I've talked to you about it on the program. I've had Margaret Frisbee from Friends of the Chicago River, who has been agitating for it for years, and it finally happened here. And, you know, for a while, the MWRD was you guys were kind of the bad guys here, you know, saying, well, it's really, if you look at the history, it's not a, oh, there were so many excuses. It was, people don't really want to use the waterway, the Chicago River. It was never meant to be recreational, so why should we clean it up? And they were all just silly. They were just silly arguments. And I know from the get-go, you wanted it to happen, but, and forgive me if I'm wrong about this, but you also had to play the game a little bit. It's like there's, you know, you come in and you can't just run roughshod over everybody and say, this is going to happen tomorrow. You have to work with your colleagues, right?
Well, that's exactly right, Mike. I did want it to happen. I'm delighted that we got there more than a year ago, but I only have one vote. So we need to
out of nine.
We need to build the critical mass, the majority of votes in favor of any policy. And we managed to get there. We got a few new members of our board who joined me, Mariana Spiropoulos and Mike Alvarez. There were the political winds were shifting in that Illinois Senators Durbin and Kirk were supportive. Both former Mayor Daley and Mayor Emanuel were supportive. 36 out of the 50 members of the Chicago City Council signed a resolution in favor of it. And then finally, the federal EPA sent a letter to the state essentially saying if the state doesn't take action, the federal government would, to mandate disinfection. And that helped to persuade a few of my other colleagues. And I think science is vital. We don't always have all the answers, but we need vision to take us the rest of the way. And I think the vision is, what do we want for our Chicago waterways? What quality of life do we want for residents of Cook County? Can this be not only an urban working river, vital for commerce, but also a wonderful amenity for people to use and enjoy and play on and work on and live near?
And part of the question was the cost. And again, one of the things that the MWRD had said was it's going to cost us $1 billion to clean it up. And then lo and behold, it turns out it was about 10% of that. And then the state is also chipping in some money, I guess $10 million or
that's right,
thereabouts. So it's amazing how those things all changed, which, you know, that actually gives me hope for some of the other things that that we have to deal with. Where do we stand with Deep Tunnel? And you talked about rain runoff. My joke was, and it hasn't been lately, but for a while it was, Deep Tunnel empties into my basement. I don't know if you're aware of that. But there are people say, I've heard people say, it doesn't work. It was a boondoggle. It's just a crazy system. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think Deep Tunnel is working. It was completed in May 2006, 109 miles of tunnel, 300 feet underground that can hold up to 2.5 billion gallons of stormwater runoff. And so it has dramatically improved the water quality in our rivers and streams, because that 2.5 billion gallons is the first flush out of the combined sewer area that has most of the pollution and contaminants that runs off the streets and is in the initial overflow. So that gets held in the tunnel until it can be pumped to the treatment plants and treated. So we've reduced those combined sewer overflows into the waterways. We haven't eliminated them because we still are excavating two major reservoirs, the Thornton Reservoir and the McCook Reservoir, that together, when they're finished, will hold 17 billion gallons of stormwater overflow.
And we need this more and more because we're getting rain events that are off the charts that we didn't used to get.
Well, and that's the thing, Mike. In my first term, I've lived through two of the wettest years on record, 2008 and 2011. And we've seen each year storms that reach the level of a 100-year storm. I think we're seeing one of the effects of global climate change, which is more intense rain events that are less predictable and more localized. So you get 4 inches of rain dumped in a small area, and no municipal sewer system can handle that. So we have runoffs And basement backups.
Right, and deep tunnels, you know, used to empty into my basement, and sometimes it does. but you're right. We have to be able to control it, and that's part of your job. And the other thing is biosolids, which is a very controversial issue, always is a controversial issue. There are folks, you and I were talking before we went on air today, and you know, I talk to a lot of people in the environmental community, and there are some who just say, no, you can never use biosolids. There's no way, no how, that they're poison. How dare you even think about using them on crops? And yet you talk to soil scientists, and I have talked to some at various universities who say, this is the future. This is, they're chock full of nutrients, and we have to find a way to use that product because we create so much waste. There's so many people. So where do you stand on biosolids?
So what Mike's talking about is what we used to call sludge, which
well,
is...
you know what, and I'm so glad you said that because, I get into the right speak here, you know. It's like, let's call it what it is. It's sludge.
So the new name is biosolids, same thing, and it's the solid residue from the sewage treatment process. The Water Reclamation District produces two kinds of biosolids that we call Class A and Class B, and they have different levels of quality, Class A being higher quality because it contains fewer of the heavy metals and other contaminants that may still reside in the sludge. And it's an excellent product for use as an amendment to athletic fields, to golf courses. It's used in tree nurseries and other farm applications where crops are grown not for human consumption. And, you know, we're mining out the phosphate reserves in the world, Mike. They're just some mines in Morocco, and they're being exhausted for agriculture. And yet we have nutrient-rich solids and also liquids that come out of our treatment plants. And we need to find ways to capture the value in those nutrients. The Water Reclamation District has partnered with a private enterprise that built a pelletizer plant at the Stickney Treatment Plant that's going to convert a third of the biosolids into pellets that are dried under very high heat. And it will become a product similar to Milorganite that Milwaukee has produced for years.
And Milwaukee has, it is a science, but they've taken it to levels unprecedented. They've been doing this for over 80 years, and, you know, they're a sponsor on my show, and I'm proud of it because I think this is something that a problem we need to solve.
Right.
And they not only use microorganisms to eliminate pathogens, but they also fire the product. Now, not all biosolids are put in furnaces the way Milorganite is, but they're... More and more folks are looking for ways to make them safe. As you mentioned, eliminate heavy metals. We have to think about pharmaceuticals in the water because everybody's throwing their stuff down the toilet, which is not. Don't do that, folks, by the way. And if you're listening, don't do that. Don't ever do that. You can take them back to be reclaimed.
On the pharmaceuticals, the city of Chicago has lock boxes in 5 area police headquarters. And at its Goose Island hazardous waste facility, you can take unused or expired medicine to any of those facilities. You can go to the district's website to see those locations. It's mwrd.org. And I agree with Mike, never flush or pour unused or expired medicine down the sink or toilet. Back to biosolids. Your guest later today, Christy Weber, is doing a nifty experiment using some of the district's biosolids in a composting operation and is finding a great deal of success. And she told me that because home building is down, construction's down, there's a severe lack of topsoil for use in landscaping. And so she's able to create a high-quality product using some small portion of biosolids to mix in with compost.
Well, Deborah Shore, Commissioner, Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, thank you so much for stopping by. She came by early. She's marching in the parade, but she said, yeah, I'll come by the remote broadcast site, and we'll talk for a little bit. And now you got a couple of hours to freshen up and get ready and get the rain barrels in order. And I hope if you come out, you wave to her and tell her what a great job she's doing. You got the most votes in the primary, and you're looking toward the general election in the fall. I'm not going to try to curse you, but I think you're going to do very well. And I thank you so much for always for coming by the program. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Mike. It's always a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks again.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees Facebook page. The East Beverly Association presents the 25th annual Beverly Hills and Morgan Park Garden Walk today from noon to 5 p.m. Garden guides will lead you from the Beverly Bank and Trust, 1908 West 103rd Street, Chicago. Or if you prefer a trolley tour, be there at 12:30 and 1 p.m. on a first-come, first-served basis. But you can do the self-guided version in your own car or on a bike. The Garden Walk is co-sponsored by Beverly Bank and the Care of Trees and highlights 9 neighborhood gardens. In addition, Master Gardeners will be on hand to answer gardening questions and provide all of the wonderful information that Master Gardeners provide. Since it's the day of the event, tickets are $12. Proceeds from the Garden Walk will benefit Beverly and Morgan Park community. And by the way, you should invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220 or find them on Facebook. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Throw insect pests overboard with Cap'n Jack's Dead Bug Brew from Bonide. As they beg for mercy, at least you can feel good that you've sealed their fate organically. Cap'n Jack's Dead Bug Brew contains Spicid, a pesticide derived from a naturally occurring soil bacterium discovered in an abandoned rum distillery in the Caribbean in 1982. Wish I had been there. Spinosad is now used worldwide in the production of organic produce. Spray Cap'n Jack's Dead Bug Brew directly on the insect or your plant to guard against chewing and sucking insects like bagworms, moths, loopers, leaf miners, thrips, and more. Arr. It's safe to use on vegetable gardens, annuals, perennials, berries, shrubs, and fruit trees. But as I always tell you, please practice RAFLD, read and follow label directions. You can get Cap'n Jack's Dead Bug Brew at Kelly Seed in Peoria, Big R Stores, all locations, Growing Ground in Bloomington, Illinois, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. While you're there, download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for your iPhone or Droid.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? Plant Skid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, Plant Skid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, Plant Skid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. Plant Skid is OMRI-listed organic, and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why PlantSkid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed or your money back.
PlantSkid. That's spelled plant, S-K-Y-D-D. PlantSkid.
All right, Dennis, you picked that music out, didn't you? I don't even know what that is.
Jane's Addiction.
Oh, okay. Cool. I had no idea. I'm sorry. I know some of Jane's Addiction, but I want that on my list.
All right.
That's going to become a regular feature. All right, cool. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and on the line... We have Rick DeMaio. Rick, I'm sitting here at the center on Halsted, overlooking Halsted Street, and getting ready for the Pride Parade. And, of course, the big question is going to be, is it going to rain on us?
Oh, I thought the big question is what you're going to go as this year.
No. I'm going as a broadcaster this year, okay, in the Pride Parade.
In fact, I'm kind of happy in this current business.
Exactly, and I'm kind of happy that I'm sitting up in the booth, because last year I was out there for 3 hours in the hot sun.
It doesn't look like we're going to get much sun today, nor, Mike, does it look like we're going to get much in the way of rainfall. I know that's the last thing you wanted to hear.
I don't know. I think if it's cloudy and not raining, that's a good day for a parade.
Well, good day for parade, but I was hoping we'd get a little bit more precipitation out of this big storm system that is rolling through parts of western Illinois that currently extends for about the Quad Cities down about Peoria. It looks like they could receive anywhere between about maybe 3/4 and about 1.5 inches of rain as this large mesoscale convective complex moves through. That's another word for a big area of thunderstorms, but it looks like the leading edge of the high clouds are just basically grazing Chicago right now. And I think if we get any rain today, it will probably be generally on a line from about LaSalle, down to maybe Kankakee, and then points westward. And I have to say, I think the chances of rain here in the Chicago metropolitan area are pretty much close to about 10%, which is not good, because we are pretty much in what I would call a severe short-term drought. Long-term drought, not as much of a problem, because we had a lot of rainfall, during the month of April and early in May, but really, since the first week of May, Mike, some parts of the area have gotten about 1/2 inch of rainfall, and that's it. And we're beginning to really see that in the form of many, many dry flower beds, container pots, obviously, if you're not watering them regularly, almost daily at this point. And the lawns across the area are pretty much close to nil right now as far as doing anything to make yourself go, oh, wow, look how green the lawn is. It's basically on the yellow to brown side. This is pretty serious stuff, and it looks like it's not going to get any better anytime soon.
And I'm looking at the radar right now, and I think you're right. It's to the south and west of us.
Right.
And then to the north and east. But once again, right smack dab in the middle where Chicago is, it just looks like nothing's going to happen.
Right. And the good thing about it, though, is that the rain that is going to fall across Illinois is probably going to fall in areas where they do probably need it more than the city does, essentially across western and west sections of, say, well, let's say east of the St. Louis area. So what that does overall, it tends to keep corn prices and soybean prices at a more reasonable level, because if you begin to get long-term widespread drought, then everybody feels the impact. But because this seems to be more of a southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, southern Illinois into Indiana, even though there's a lot of corn in those particular areas, the rainfall that we got across areas in Minnesota and Wisconsin last week and parts of western Iowa kind of suppressed things a little bit. So we always look at, you know, what is happening large scale, long term, and I think we've kind of made a dent in that regard. However, even with the front that comes through here later on this afternoon, which should push the winds around to the northeast sometime around, say, 7 or 8 o'clock this evening, that'll drop readings back into the upper 60s, probably by about, say, 9 o'clock. It's going to be a fairly strong wind shift off the lake, and the lake is still only about 61 or 62 degrees in the middle of the lake. And then tomorrow looks nice. Generally, readings in the 70s, and now we're looking at Tropical Storm Debbie in the northeastern Gulf of Mexico. And yesterday, Mike, it was interesting because the hurricane model had that storm basically moving into the western Gulf of Mexico. Yet there were two or three other numerical models that were taking it almost directly into the Florida panhandle and making a right turn. Now people are saying, well, how does that affect us up here in Chicago? Well, it does so in a couple of ways. A hurricane is like a big bowling ball in a large pool of Jell-O. And you tip one side of the pool one way, and that bowling ball kind of slides that way, and it kind of changes the way the Jell-O is to the top of the bowling ball. Now it looks like the pool is tipping the other way, and what happens is if the storm moves out across Florida and into the Atlantic, all the hot weather that's been sitting out over the western plain states is going to move into Chicago. So yesterday's long-range forecast for us, because they had the hurricane basically moving into the Gulf of Mexico and into maybe parts of Houston area, maybe in the southern areas of Louisiana. And this is not going to become a hurricane, so we're not concerned about that. But it was basically going to keep us under relatively cool weather. It was going to block all the warm weather from getting into us. It was going to keep us in cool weather for the rest of the week. Now it looks like we may see temperatures into the low 90s on Wednesday, maybe even mid to upper 90s for Thursday and Friday. So I wouldn't be surprised when some of this newer information gets into the markets later on today and tomorrow. I would not be surprised if we start to see some much, much higher prices for corn and soybeans, because now it looks like we're getting back into a hot and dry pattern for the rest of the week.
So you're into corn futures, huh?
Well, it doesn't mean into corn futures, but I think it when you go to the store and you see corn for two for a dollar, it should be more like three for a dollar or four for a dollar. So, yeah, I get a little bit concerned about that. And, you know, and at the same time, it also begins to affect how we're going to end up getting rain around here. If it looked like we were going to cool down a little bit, it would probably keep us in lower evaporation rates. But now with Hurricane Debbie moving off to the east, we may get right back into a half inch per day due to the hotter, drier weather. So I think I'm looking at it not so much from corn futures, but also how it affects us from a weather standpoint.
But that you know, that's fascinating, the way you talk about how a hurricane can change things, because here we are in the Midwest, as you say, without the rain, it really helps when we have the cooler temperatures.
Right.
And then if they shoot back up, as you say, that evaporation rate can get really high.
Yeah, I think that thing more than anything, and it's not a hurricane, it's still a tropical storm, but still,
I'm sorry,
something like
tropical
that,
storm.
If it would have moved up into the Western Gulf, most likely. There were some numerical models last week that actually took that storm, the remnants of it, and moved it into the southern Mississippi Valley. It probably would have given us some cloud cover and some cooler temperatures and rain, and that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Also, typically we don't see the fourth named storm until usually about the end of August, maybe early September. We average 11 named storms during the course of the normal hurricane season. And think about it, we're still in June, and we're up to number four here. And probably people are saying, well, where did three go? I don't even remember having an A, B, or C. We had Alberto off the coast of North Carolina for it seemed to be about 2 days. And then we had Beryl, which was down across the southeast as well. And over this past week, we had a storm called Chris that developed in the western Atlantic. It became a hurricane for what seemed to be maybe about 6 to 12 hours, but it was a storm, and it did show some fairly good signs of developing, and now all of a sudden we have Debbie. And when you start to get early signs of your tropical storm season begin to develop, I always say that usually leads to whatever warm weather you get in the Midwest, it kind of prolongs it into late August and September. And again, now we've hit 13 days above 90 degrees. It looks like we'll get another two, if not three, maybe by the end of the week. We could be talking to you next weekend seeing 16 days above 90 when we average 18 for the year, and we haven't even gotten into July 1st yet. That's a little bit unnerving.
That is unnerving, and you know, all of this it happened when people started planting their vegetables and getting their vegetable gardens going, and it's been a struggle to keep up with it. And the one saving grace has been the cool temperatures that have made that a little easier.
Right. And the thing about it is, even though we've been hot, it hasn't been extreme heat. We did have some higher humidities this past week, but it seemed that even when it got humid and it got hot, it still wasn't oppressive. You know, it wasn't like the stuff where you have heat index values, you know, well into the 100s. But listening to, you know, Deborah Shore earlier, who was always a fascinating interview, just to listen to her talk so much about how the water reclamation plant is so much into the history of the Chicago River and runoff and things like that, and climate change and climate variability. I get a little bit concerned sometimes when we do get these drought-busting type rains that we won't end up with a 6 to 8 inch rainfall over, you know, rock-hard, concrete-light soil, where you do end up getting massive flooding.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of where we are at the moment. It is it's a little dicey. So, do you see any long-term pattern change?
You know what? The only thing I see is a continuation of what we have right now, which is heat out to the west. Cooler temperatures off to the north and east. Last week when I was on with you, I mentioned that we'd probably get into wetter weather here by the end of the week, and it looked like we were going to, but now all that rain has generally set up across Iowa and into western Illinois. So we kind of missed out on that, parts of Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, record rainfall up there. But pretty much for the next several days, Mike, as we kind of detail the forecast, mid-80s today, rain stays to the south of us, low 70s tomorrow, 60s along the lakefront, low to mid-70s on Tuesday, and it looks like as Tropical Storm Debbie moves off to the east, hot weather for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday with not a single drop of rain possibly, Mike, around here until maybe next Saturday or Sunday.
Yikes. Yikes. Yeah, we're setting up rain barrels for our community garden, but there's nothing to put in them. There's nothing coming
off the roofs
right
now. Well, you can always
hang
a hose over the roof and let that do the work, right?
Well, we just put the hose in the barrel right now, and then we let the water gas off.
I'm trying to recreate rain coming off the gutters.
Yeah. Well, Rick, always a pleasure. And the good news is, cool tomorrow and Tuesday. We're shooting the next segments of Dig In Chicago. Jennifer Brennan and I are shooting them tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So it'll start to get warm by Wednesday, but we're not too bad off in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I want to see dirt under the fingernails on TV. I want to see you really begin the work.
Okay. Rick DeMaio, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com or MikeNovak.net. Rick, we will talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good, guys.
All right, have fun. And in the second hour, Wes King, Policy Director, Illinois Stewardship Alliance, we're going to be talking about the Farm Bill, which is coming up. We just had a Senate vote going to the House. It's very complicated. Stay tuned.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show, broadcasting today from the center on Halsted. People still lining up outside. It's still pretty quiet. Rick DeMaio says probably no rain, which is good for the parade, bad for gardeners. It's turning into a tough year. It really is. And be smart when you water. I was on Ron Cowgill's show, Mighty House, yesterday, and we talked a little bit about lawns. My feeling is let it go brown, let it go dormant. If you can get just a half inch of water to your lawn every 3 to 4 weeks, it'll keep the lawn from dying. What happens is the crowns go dormant and they turn brown, but they're still viable. So when the rains come, they green back up. That's the way cool season grasses work. And the cool season grass are the Kentucky bluegrasses and fescues and the annual rise, and they're happy to go dormant and come back when it rains. I mean, obviously, if they go dormant for too long, they can die, but you don't need that much water to keep them in a dormant stage. But really, you're better off. If you're going to water your lawn, water it deeply. Get it an inch of water a week and do it just once a week. And the other thing I mentioned yesterday was in terms of grubs, hey, you know, when the beetles are looking for Japanese beetles or the other beetles are looking for a place to lay their eggs, they're looking for something nice and moist. So if your lawn is dry, they're going to go to your neighbors who's sprinkling, you know, 10 minutes a day at noon in the hot sun every day. And if he's doing that, or she, but it's usually a he, tell him to stop. Tell him that's just a waste of water. That's just crazy. So again, when you do water, let's water deeply and infrequently. What I forgot to ask about the lake breeze. I'm sorry. My engineer here, Mike McCarthy, had asked about the lake breeze. Wow, you got something going on? Are you going to be on the lake? No? He just wanted to know what the lake breeze was. Okay. So I forgot to ask Rick DeMille. Sorry about that. But you now water tree root. Oh, yeah. So Mike's giving me tips here to pass along about watering trees, tree roots at the drip line, which is actually a really good point. If you've got a mature tree, water it at the drip line because that's where the roots that absorb the water are. They're not the thick roots. They're the fibrous roots that are way out on the end. And the thing about tree roots is that they extend actually further than the drip line. You can tree roots can go out much further than the drip line, but that's a much safer place to water a tree than at the base, especially if the tree is mature. Now, if you just planted a tree, you've got a root ball there. You want to soak the root ball, and the best way to do that is not with a sprinkler, but with a drip hose. Just get a drip hose and a trickle, just a trickle of water, but you can leave it out there for a half an hour or an hour. And then some people do it by quadrants. So they do the four quadrants of the root ball for their planted trees, and that keeps it hydrated. So that's something, if you planted a tree this spring, boy, you're hurting. This was not the year, but you never know that. That's part of the problem. You just don't know when those years are going to come around. And we didn't know it was going to get this dry after what we had earlier. So a couple of watering tips there. Like I said, if you've got a newly planted tree, use the drip hose. If you're going to be planting or watering a mature tree, and mature trees can use the water too, go out to the drip line, and you can use a sprinkler there. That's going to be really helpful. This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to the phone and bring in Wes King, who's the policy director for the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. Wes, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you? Oh, my pleasure. Where are you this morning?
I'm actually calling from St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri. And so you're missing the Pride Parade, Wes.
I am, actually. Yeah, I didn't know all that was going on down here, but down here for the weekend, just kind of a small, short vacation getaway, going to some nice restaurants and taking some, you know, just some good R&R time.
Good for you. Good for you. R&R is a good thing. Wes is, as I said, with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance and with Advocates for Urban Agriculture. He's co-chair of the Local Food Systems and Marketing Committee for the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Anything I've missed here, Wes? You're doing a lot of things.
Yeah, no, I think that's you know, a good summary. You know, I'm sure I could come up with some other things that I'm involved with, and I know I could, but that generally sums it up. Yeah, it's good.
And you're here to talk today about the Farm Bill, and this is something that I've been meaning to get to for a while. And then when the Senate took action this week, I saw a post that you had made, and I thought, you know, this is the time to get Wes on the phone so we can bring people up to speed about the Farm Bill. And as I mentioned earlier, I had Deborah Shore on the show earlier, and we just kind of touched on it. Deborah from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. The Farm Bill, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like trying to read an encyclopedia or something. It is so complex. And there are so many moving parts. It's probably a good thing that this only comes up once every, what, 5 years, right?
Generally every 5 years. That's kind of how they set it up. But, you know, it all depends on politics, election cycles, things like that. So sometimes it's every 6 years, 4 years, 5 years, right around there. But, yeah you're right. It's so complicated. I think the term they use is an omnibus bill, but, you know, because it really is omni, a little bit of everything.
Right, and among the things are subsidies. There's the SNAP program, which used to be called food stamps. There is the environmental issues.
Conservation programs.
There are – I'm sorry?
Yeah, just conservation programs, rural development programs. It's, you know, it's all over the board. It really is fairly comprehensive.
So give me an idea of what your reaction was, because we can't possibly examine every aspect of this, but we can look at some. But the first thing I want you to tell me is how you felt when you saw that the Senate had taken it up, managed to survive 73 amendments and get them all voted on last week, I think on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. And the bill comes out and now goes to the House. What was your reaction to the bill that came out of the Senate?
You know, it was somewhat a little bit surprising just that they got the job done. That's one of the things over the last 3 to 6 months everyone's been in life. No one knew for sure whether or not anybody was going to be able to pull the right people together and get something so massive with so much spending. You know, it's something like $500 billion over the next 5 years, and with all this talk about deficits and cuts, a lot of people didn't think it was going to happen. So first, it was kind of surprised that they actually got it done. But then, you know, I want to say pleasantly surprised or pleasantly happy, you know, with reservations with the outcome. It actually included some important changes. You know, while it's definitely reform in the incremental sense and not really kind of some of the more sweeping new direction to the American food and agriculture system that a lot of people, including the Stewardship Alliance, advocates for, it wasn't just status quo business as usual, which was, you know, it surprising and, you know, a welcome development.
What are now, I know that you've been working with Senator Dick Durbin on a number of aspects of this bill. What in particular were you reaching out to him about?
Yeah, the one thing that we really, you know, from the kind of the local food system, sustainable agriculture side, we were really pushing two amendments, and that was this amendment that was offered by Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio to fund rural development and beginning farmer programs. That was one of the really somewhat surprising disappointments of the farm bill that the U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee put together, was that it really was short on funding for beginning farmer programs that help train people who want to get into agriculture, start new farmers, train them really how to do the business side and operate a farm. You know, it's not – getting into farming is not one of the easiest businesses to get into. So that was really exciting. You know, one reason I think for us is because a lot of the beginning farmers – tend to be the ones who are more interested in growing, you know, for local markets, growing for direct markets, growing in sustainable, using sustainable methods. So that was really important for us. But then also within that amendment was funding for rural development programs. There was basically no funding in the Senate's Ag Committee bill for some of these, some longer standing, but some more newer programs that, you know, are basically just meant for rural development. A lot of those have gone to help some of these local food entrepreneurs start businesses. The one that we were particularly interested in was this the value-added producer grant program, which are grants that help farmers or groups of farmers to either do research, to create a business plan, or actually help match in terms of capital costs for starting some sort of value-added business. And what I mean value-added is processing. Let's, you know, you're growing fruits and vegetables, you want to freeze them or can them. That's adding value. Or let's say you're you raise grass-fed beef. You want to make beef jerky. Beef jerky is a value-added product. So we were really excited about that. And then the other one, the conservation. There was a conservation compliance is kind of the way it's described. But for a long time, with all the commodity programs, just your kind of traditional subsidies, there's always been some basic requirements in terms of conservation that you, in order to receive these subsidies, you have to do a minimum level of conservation on your farm. You know, you can't just farm it willy-nilly. And part of that is also prohibitions against, you know, tearing up native prairie, sensitive wetlands, and highly erodible land, and putting those into production. So those requirements have been in place for the commodity, the traditional commodity subsidy programs, but they took them off crop insurance about 10 years ago or so in order to encourage more farmers to get into the crop insurance program, because in order for crop insurance to work, like any insurance, you need a certain amount of people within the actual pool of people there so that it actually works. So they did this to encourage people to get into crop insurance. Well, they don't need that anymore. The crop insurance has really become, and especially with this new farm bill, become the center of the food, the farmer safety net. So they don't really need that to encourage them to get in the program. We were really hoping and pushing for this amendment that would restore some of that conservation compliance into the crop insurance program. And it happened. You know, there were a lot of people earlier this spring that, you know, there was mixed message on whether or not it would actually be included in the final farm bill. It was, along with that amendment for funding rural development.
Well, Wes, there are people who would argue, and I'm sure you read these posts and articles. If you go to one side of the argument, there are people who think that traditional farming, every time the farm bill comes out, traditional farming is under attack from the left. And these foodies who want they want small farms and they want environmental protections and so forth.
Yeah.
And then there's the people on that side who say, well, don't, you know, the farm bill is just going to be the same old, and all the money's going to go to the big farmers. In fact, if you look at a chart of it, I saw a chart in the New York Times, 80% of the farms get about 10% of the money. It really is not equal in distribution. So it's kind of like trying to turn the Titanic around while it's sinking.
Yeah.
So do you have hope about the structure change in the farm bill, or are we like 90% same old here?
It's hard to give it a percentage, but I'll say this, like that was part of what some of the surprise was, and really excitement about what they did pass. There really are some important reforms in terms of starting to move the ship in the right direction, in terms of, you know, making sure money goes to the people who actually need it, as opposed to just the wealthiest farmers. There are a bunch of things that were included in terms of payment limits, were things that ag reform groups have been trying to get in farm bills for the last two decades. One of those, which was really important, that actually was included in the committee's bill, was a prohibition against. There's always been this loophole within the commodity system where people who aren't actively managing farms, so basically wealthy landowners who live in, you know, New York City or Chicago, were collecting these subsidy payments that were really meant to go to help actual farmers. There was finally language included in the bill that eliminated that loophole, which was really just a definition loophole, because they hadn't really defined what, you know, a working manager or the specifics are a little different than that, but that's essentially what it was. And then also one of the things that Senator Durbin, this was kind of an interesting fellows of an amendment Senator Durbin championed was, with Senator Coburn, a limit to crop insurance. Basically, it was an income means test that basically said if as a couple or individual you're making, you know, this certain level of adjusted gross income on your farm, you don't receive as much of a subsidy from the crop insurance program, which, you know, it probably would have been better if they just eliminated the subsidy altogether for these wealthy farmers, but still a reduction.
Yeah, well, why can't, you know, and yeah, well, that can't always happen, obviously, but you sometimes wish it would. One of the things I got, a friend of mine sent me an email about how there was a particular victory in terms of the Clean Water Act that and this was a an email that said they were that what was trying to happen was blocking the new gardens to protect small river streams, wetlands as waters of the U.S., exempting direct discharges of pesticides. They were trying to do that, repealing numeric nutrient limits, and stopping the EPA from regulating stormwater discharges, which would be not good. Some of the environmental issues were resolved by the Senate, but now you know what happens. It's going to the House.
Yep.
And
no one knows what's going to happen there either.
Yeah. Well, okay, hang on a second. Let me take a short break, and we'll get back with Wes King from who's with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, and maybe we'll make a prediction about what's going to happen as the bill moves forward into the House of Representatives. You're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and here's something of interest from a new sponsor. You heard him in the first hour. It's Back to Nature. And I'm going to reiterate, no, not the Cotton Burr Compost people, but the people who offer health and beauty products for a better way of life. Marcin and Christina Hench would like to invite you to the grand reopening of the Back to Nature Health and Beauty Store in Wheeling. The construction is finally over at the new Fresh Farms Plaza at Dundee Road and Milwaukee Avenue, and the Back to Nature store is now bigger and better than ever. They offer a great variety of the best natural vitamins and minerals, as well as natural cosmetics, sports nutrients, supplements for men, women, and children. Hey, even for your beloved pets. They also have books on natural health solutions and a very knowledgeable staff at each of their 8 stores in the Chicagoland area. But be sure to stop by the grand reopening of their Back to Nature store in Wheeling, located at 259 East Dundee Road in the Fresh Farms Plaza next to Great Clips Barbershop right behind Chase Bank. You'll love the great selection and friendly staff. And their motto is, be healthy, stay healthy with Back to Nature.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Put down the Red Ryder BB gun and pick up some Bonide Repels All Animal Repellent. Repels All is an all-natural repellent that uses smell, taste, and irritation to keep those nibbling rabbits, squirrels, deer, chipmunks, raccoons, and more at bay. Unlike other commercial repellents, Repels All has no unpleasant odor and is effective for up to 2 months guaranteed. Repels All's natural formula can be applied to trees, shrubs, perennials, and around edible crops. It also works to prevent animals from chewing on fences and other questionably delicious structures. Repels All is available in concentrate, ready-to-use, and ready-to-spray liquid formulations, and in easy-to-spread granules. Look for Repels All products at these fine stores: Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, Graff Gardens in Worth, Illinois, Bertholdt's Flower Barn in Elk Grove, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. While you're there, download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for use on your iPhone or Droid. Platte Hill Nursery in Bloomingdale and Carpentersville has some advice for gardeners around Chicago. Contrary to popular belief, summer is still a great time to plant. It's also an excellent time to improve other parts of the yard, including mulching and adding hardscapes as accents. There's always something new at Platte Hill Nursery. For instance, their tomatoes and peppers in one-gallon containers, regularly $7.95, are just $4.88 through July 3rd. Perennials in 4-inch containers, regularly $4.19, are just $2.88. You can also save on ivory, halo dogwoods, green velvet, and green mountain boxwoods, birdseed, and blended compost. The Platte Hill Nurseries are like your hometown bakery, except they grow plants instead of baking bread, and they have the same old-time devotion to quality and service that you experience with a locally owned specialty retailer. Platte Hill Nursery is located on Randall Road, just 3 miles north of I-90, and on Lake Street, US 20, just 3 miles west of I-355. Go to PlatteHillNursery.com or like them on Facebook. Platte Hill is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, sitting here in the center on Halsted, waiting for the big parade. People getting their seats. There's still some good seats available, as they say. So stop on by. It kicks off at noon. We have the big broadcast from noon to 3. And Marshall Stern from Awakened America will join me then. And I'm hoping to see Christy Weber and her partner Jennifer Rule in the studio here. It's not actually a studio, it's a room with windows overlooking the parade. And Rick DeMille says that we will not have rain. He's thinking about 10% possibility. You know what? Even if we get some, it's not going to be a lot. It'll probably feel good if you're out there standing and watching, or even marching in the parade. And right now on the phone I have Wes King, Policy Director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. We're talking about the 2012 Farm Bill, which is wending its way through our Congress. It was, Wes, I got a tweet from one of my listeners, Blissful. Well, actually, I don't know if she's listening. She might just be tweeting this morning, Blissful Seed. And when I said it, reforming agribusiness is like turning around the Titanic while it's sinking, and she said, no kidding. This is hard work, isn't it?
It sure is. It's hard work and it's complicated work. And it's go ahead.
I just gonna say I don't know how you keep track of everything in here. I mean, you have certain things you want to do, but as I mentioned earlier, and I keep stating, everybody's got their own interest in it. And as I said before, now it goes to the House. And one of the things that worries me is that the SNAP program is a huge part of this bill, right?
Yeah, I believe it's about 80% actually of the funding within the bill is the SNAP program, it's 80% is nutrition programs, which is predominantly SNAP or food stamps.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the House of Representatives about to bring out the carving knives for that part of it?
You know, there's going to be a strong contingency of a lot of the Tea Party Republicans who that's what they want to do. They want to bring the knife out. They want to bring the axe out and chop as much out of the food stamp program or SNAP program as they can. But, you know, they're going to have a hard – it's going to be really messy, I'm thinking, because that's not going to work. They're not going to be able to pass something with huge, massive cuts to the SNAP program. As it was in the Senate, it's got to be bipartisan. It's that the nature of the food and farm system is it's bipartisan. It doesn't matter. It doesn't care what party you are. And that tends to be how it shakes out.
So as it goes to the House, aside from that part of it, what else do you see in danger that that passed in the Senate that you thought was progress?
Say that again.
I'm, as we go to the House, what do you think? You know, there were things that passed in the Senate that you thought were progress in the Farm Bill. Which of those do you think are in danger in the House?
What I've the rumors that I've heard is compared to the Senate, they're gonna take much bigger whack on food stamps, much bigger whack on conservation programs, and but it's the thought is it's going to be better in terms of beginning farmer programs. So it's going to be a mixed bag. I think the big differences in terms of steps backward are going to be those cuts to conservation programs and food stamp programs. I also heard rumors that some of the really positive new programs in the Senate bill that had to do with kind of local food systems might not get as much support in the House. But a lot of this is, you know, it's speculation at this point. The House Ag Committee has not released a draft bill, and their plan is they're not going to hold a committee markup, which is, you know, when they actually take up this bill in their committee and will pass it out until after the 4th, waiting to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, the things you're talking about just don't surprise me in terms, because that's sort of predictable Tea Party politics there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, slash as much spending as you can. And although, as you say, it is surprising that the new farmers do get support or seem to in the House of Representatives. Well, Wes, you keep me posted. I'm sure I'll be reading your posts with you know, as they come up in the next few weeks, and maybe we will talk again about this and see where we go from here. But good news out of the Senate as we move forward.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'd love to be back. I'm sure there's going to be, once the House takes this up, whether or not they take it up, there's going to be a lot to talk about. There's so much in this in you could probably. We'll do a several-week series on it, just trying to cover the, you know, a portion of it. So,
All right. And we're losing your cell, so I think it's a good time to sign off. Hey, have fun in St. Louis, and I will talk to you in the future.
All right, sounds great. Thanks.
All right, Wes. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In just a few minutes, we will have Mr. Stern come in here, and we'll do a little preview of the Pride Parade in our big broadcast. I have not there's no Heather Fry sighting yet, no Christy Weber sighting, but they will be here later on. One of the things I've got on the website this week that you might be interested in is you know, you gardeners out there, information on cucumber beetles, squash vine borers, information on how to survive an attack. One of the things you need to know about cucumber beetles is they're a triple threat. Adults that have overwintered munch on young plants, and then they deposit larvae in the soil. The larvae eat tender young roots and then turn into a new generation of adults, and then they chow down on plant leaves and blossoms. Ah! They also transmit bacterial wilt and squash mosaic virus. Yikes. Now, one of the best things you can do is just not plant too early. Now, I know a lot of you probably already have those cucurbits out there, but I've heard this from Wally, Dr. Wally. I've heard it from Dan Costa, who I haven't heard from in a while. Just wondering where he is. But my buddy Dan Costa out at Vernon Goers in Hinsdale, and they say you can beat this to some degree. Well, especially squash vine borer. By planting later, you know, you try to defeat the insect in their life cycle. Put your plants in at a time when they've already passed the point where those eggs are going to come out and chow down and, you know, bore into the stems of your plants, especially with squash vine borers. I would think, I'm not positive, maybe I can get some help here if some people want to shoot me information, but I think at this point it's probably pretty good to plant the squash plants But Jennifer Brennan also has a tip about planting these things so that they don't get attacked by squash vine borers and cucumber beetles. And one of them is you put them under mulch. Get the vines themselves under the mulch, you know, with the leaves sticking up, and it makes it harder for them to get out of the soil and the eggs and the larvae to come into the plant. So cover your stems with mulch, and that is going to be helpful. You can also do row covers, but at this point, it's probably a little late. I'm sure they're sending up blossoms, because if you have row covers on, you can't get the pollinators in there either. So I've got lots of links here on the website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can see there's a great article from the University of Minnesota about, Dennis tells me, informs me we have a caller. Let's go to the caller. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. It's Seamus Ford with Root Riot.
Hey, Seamus. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good.
Root Riot. Tell us all about Root Riot, because you're on the west side, and you've added a new garden this year, haven't you?
We have. We have. Root Riot's a network of urban community gardens. We have one in Oak Park, one in the Austin neighborhood on the west side, and we just started one in the East Garfield Park neighborhood called Kumba Trayam. And I wanted to just let everybody know that at Harambe Garden, we have goats that one of our gardeners has been raising as part of a project to really develop a cooperative around raising goats in the city. And there's an event that we're having on this coming Thursday, that is about, you know, what's involved in doing that. So anybody that wants to learn about it, anybody's given any thought to raising goats, they can come out and, one, try some milk and cheese and maybe even some ice cream, but then also have an opportunity
Wait. You've got goat ice cream, too.
Well, we might. We might. We're hoping to. But, yeah, any dairy product can be turned into ice cream, which this time of year I think is it's very popular, right?
Uh-huh.
But the basic idea is really to give people a chance to, you know, get a sense of what's involved. I mean, it's pretty cool. The goats have been at the Garfield Park Conservatory 1 week a month over the, you know, this summer, and they will be until the fall. And they were covered on television. I think one of the local networks covered them about 2 weeks ago. But you know, as people get excited about this, this will really be a chance to kind of get the reality of it and see how it's organized and, you know, how we're...
Let me ask you a question here. Okay, so the goats are they living at one of your gardens and they visit the Garfield Park Conservatory?
They don't live in the garden. They live at night. They spend night in the garage of the lady that has started this whole project. Then they spend the daytimes in various vacant lots that we've got an agreement to participate in. And then beyond that, one time a week, we also have once a month, we have over at the Garfield Park Conservatory there, they spend the day there.
Yeah, I had heard about that, spending the day at the Garfield Park Conservatory. Tell me a little bit more about the event this Thursday.
Well, it's basically just a chance for people to come out and see the goats and meet them and, you know, see the, you know, try the actual milk and cheese that's made from their milk, and then also be able to, you know, see where they live and how it's done and, you know, really get a sense of what it takes
to raise a goat.
To raise a goat, to live with a goat, to manage it.
And, of course, they don't really eat tin cans, right?
No, you know, and that wouldn't be responsible at all, because, you know, the fact is that they if they're going to produce milk, they have to have a diet that supports that. And,
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing about goats kind of famously.
You're taking me much too seriously, Seamus. You're taking me much too seriously. But the thing is, you can use them. They will eat. They'll forage in a field, and you can use them as a lawnmower.
Absolutely, and they mow, if you will, to a certain height. They don't go all the way down to the ground. They leave a couple. I believe it's 2 inches when they eat the grass and the weeds, and you know they more or less know what's good for them and what's not. So they're very self-sufficient that way. And the other thing is, it's an incredible source of compost, and we used a lot of it for hot compost over the winter, and we're able to grow spinach outdoors in a greenhouse. But because of the hot compost they generated, that was possible.
That's cool. And the other thing is, I saw the video you did online. I think you posted it on Facebook of the swarm, the bee swarm that you had.
Yeah,
That was very cool. Tell us about
really
that.
It really was. Well, we have 4 beehives adjacent to the garden, and this is all stuff I learned that day. But you know, when it's time for a bee colony to reproduce, the queen leaves, and all of the bees in the colony follow her. And so if she goes and she lands on a branch, they'll then come and land next to her, and then they land on top of one another, and that's why you have that sort of just mass of bees. And at that particular time, they're extremely docile. So the beekeeper, one of the beekeepers at Garfield Park Conservatory, came out, and he performed what's called capturing the swarm. And so, you know, with no protective gear, it's kind of amazing, cut the branch.
Yeah, I saw. I was pretty amazed by that. Looking at the video, I couldn't believe it was just, okay, you want to handle this, that's great. But nobody seemed to be hurt at all.
No, not at all. And you know, honestly, it's just part of the magic of what happens at Harambe. You know, while I was shooting that video, we were standing underneath a colony of parrots that's been there for 4 years, out on the west side as well. So I think it's part of the good Harambe karma that we have developed over the last several years.
Yeah. So, congratulations on the latest garden. And if folks want more information about Root Riot, they can go to root-riot.com. Are you on Facebook?
We have a Facebook page as well, yeah.
And tell me what it is so I can call it up right now.
You should just be able to search for Root. Actually, Root-Riot. There's another company called Root Riot. They do aquaponics.
And there's a musician in a band. There we go, Root Riot Urban Garden Network. So I'm gonna like you right now, but if you go to root-riot urban garden network, you can find that. And you're gonna and the reason I asked, because I'm assuming you're posting about your event there this Thursday.
Yeah, we'll actually have all the information posted on the front page of the site a little bit later today.
Cool.
As well as other classes that we're offering.
Great. Well, Seamus Ford, always good to hear from you. I'm glad you were listening. I'm glad you called in and let us know about the goats.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. You have a great Sunday.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Here it is. Care of Trees Facebook page. The Care of Trees linked to the Chicago Trees Initiative, which has some advice for planting trees. One of the most significant mistakes is to plant the tree too deeply. I would say that when people plant trees, I agree. That's the chief mistake they make. Most tree roots are located in the top 12 inches of soil, and if the roots are covered with more soil, the chance for oxygen exchange is compromised and causes the roots to suffocate. Planting a portion of the root ball slightly above grade and sloping the soil away from the trunk will help to ensure good trunk and root aeration. You know, the best way to do it, the trees have this thing at the base. It's called a flare, and it's just where the tree starts to. It's like the bell-bottom trousers, and the flare comes out, and that flare should go. You should be able to see it. If it's sticking out of the ground like a telephone pole, you've probably planted it too deeply. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220 or find them on Facebook. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? PlantSkid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, PlantSkid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months in winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, PlantSkid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. PlantSkid is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why PlantSkid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed or your money back.
PlantSkid. That's spelled plant, S-K-Y-D-D. PlantSkid.
When's the last time you stepped into a real garden center? A place that's friendly, in the neighborhood, where quality service and information is an everyday promise. Welcome to Hawthorne Gardens, located at 24481 North Old McHenry Road in Hawthorne Woods. This family-owned garden center has been providing unique products for your home and garden since 1980. They're a great source for water garden supplies. They're also the area's premier wild bird supply store. June is perennial month, and owner Bill Cook says, don't be a May gardener. I couldn't agree more. Visit Hawthorne Gardens and see what perennials are blooming now in June before it's over. Now is also the time to fill in those annual pots and beds so you'll have color for the rest of the season. There are many sales and salespeople to help with your choices. Hawthorne Gardens is just 3 miles north of historic Long Grove. Visit them at hawthornegardens.net or like them on Facebook. I have. Hawthorne Gardens is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I hate to be the one to break the news to you, but if you had a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you'd already have a copy of the July-August issue. Maybe you don't like to rush things, but it's already meteorological July, which is something I just made up. Anyway, if you had the July-August issue, you could turn to the What to Do in the Garden page, where you'd learn that it's time to remove flower spikes from early blooming perennials like catmint, hardy geraniums, also known as cranesbill, salvia, and delphiniums to encourage reblooming. You'd also learn that it's not such a bad thing to let your lawn go dormant if the rain isn't consistent, and it has not been this year. You'd learn that now is the time to sow seeds of beets, beans, collards, cucumbers, summer squash, and cabbage. And you might accidentally read my column on the inside back page. Some people say I've outdone myself this time and they want me to stop while I'm ahead. I'm considering it. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. My thanks to Denny over at the studio who's spinning the dials there, and to Mike McCarthy here at the center on Halstead who's also spinning the dials. You know, before I get to Marshall Stern, who's popped into the room here, I had started to talk about some of the ways that you can control squash beetles, and squash bugs and cucumber beetles. And I was mentioning delayed planting. You know, that's and this is off that University of Minnesota site, which is very, very good article. You can growers can avoid the first generation of cucumber beetles by keeping fields cucurbit free until establishment of summer cucurbits like cucumbers, pumpkins, and squash. Floating row covers physically exclude both cucumber beetles and squash bugs during the seedling stage of plant growth. Now, many of you are probably past this. You're going, what? I've already got them planted. Well, you know, then go to weed control, which is a special consideration, row cover, especially if you're using the row covers. But mulching, as I mentioned earlier, can deter cucumber beetles from laying eggs in the ground near plant stems. That's why you might want to put some mulch around those stems. Mulches also function as a barrier to larval migration and feeding on fruits. So this is all great information. And again, go to MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And it's all up there. And I just wanted to get that information out so that you can get some help. And I'm looking at the Twitter. I got a tweet from Megalophonus says, heading out to see Radio Red 2, which would be Heather, I believe.
That makes sense.
And Mike now at Pride Parade. Y'all coming, right? So, yeah, look at the people lining up. Marshall Stern is here with me overlooking the parade route, and we're getting ready for the big broadcast.
Very exciting, Mikey. I woke up this morning, and it's kind of been a tease. It's been very odd. I woke up this morning, very gray. It's like, oh, it's a gray day. Then all of a sudden, 10 minutes later, the sun's out. And it's oh, it's going to be sunny. And then it got gray again.
Yeah.
And then the sun's out. So,
and I think that's what we're going to have all day because there's a front coming through. And Rick DeMaio was talking earlier that it looks as though we will not get rain. So
good.
That's good. Yeah, but it's not good for gardeners. It's not good for farmers. And
I forgot, this is still the Mike Novak.
It really is. Yeah, let's keep it straight here. This is, yeah,
right.
we haven't gotten to the Pride Parade yet. But we got a ton of people we're going to be talking to today.
You know, Mike, if you and I ever want to do a gardening show,
yeah,
we can make it stem to stern.
Okay, and this is unfortunately what.
Hey, where's my rim shot?
This is what I'm going to be dealing with all afternoon.
3 hours, baby.
Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. I may not show up. I may leave here. I might just get out and wow. But you look at the route and people getting out early now. An hour's not. Too early, but it will be packed. It will, you know, they've got the barricades on the street here, and right now there's just one row of people, but by the time this thing gets going, it'll be backed up all the way up the sidewalk, and they changed the route this year, which I think is a good idea.
Right.
They are bringing it from the north and going south instead of looping around on Halsted and
probably more friendly territory, I would think.
I just think it's better crowd control, better traffic flow.
Yeah,
you know. I wanted to look at do we get to divulge who we have on the show?
Sure, let's
today?
Do that. Let's divulge a little bit. Do a little bit of teasing.
Okay, we can do that. I'm looking for my my list of of course. Stephanie Miller is going to be one of our guests today.
Oh, that was the one I was going to tease.
Oh, no, no, we got it. No, no, no.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, you got to let people know that Steph's
I was just
going to
say, a certain radio personality who's on in the morning, who has hair and...
I've got
I was going to give clues. Well, I know. I understand. Like, you start out very broad, and then you not really, no.
No.
Okay. All right, Stephanie Miller. Yes, Stephanie Miller's going to be on?
Yeah, so we'll be talking to her.
That's right.
Who else?
We also have, this is really cool. We have the winner of Gay Idol, who's going to be on with us. And it's very interesting. He's a guy who just moved here 2 months ago, and he won the Gay Idol competition singing Try a Little Tenderness. He's from Memphis.
Really? Is he going to do a little? Now, is he going to be here in the booth?
He's going to be here in the booth. I've already asked him. He sent me a clip. We couldn't play it on the radio. It wasn't clean enough. But I asked him if he would be willing to sing a little bit for
us. Well, I think we definitely got to get him.
Yeah.
Now, and I believe now it's, and I don't know. Oh, wait a second. The redhead is here.
Oh, yes.
Hey.
Oh, Miss Fry.
Hey, redhead, get over here.
Come on.
There she is.
She's
you know.
Eating.
Grab a microphone. Do you know which one you got for her?
Hi.
So, what? She's hanging out chowing down. Not going to come in and say hi.
Sustenance. Hello.
Hi.
You don't need it yet, but you're going to need it.
Yes.
Yes.
If I'm going to be out there and, you know, working up a sweat.
I heard about your cannon routine last year.
I did. Me and the sparkly pink tank. We had a tango. It was lovely. I tangled with a sparkly pink tank. Pink tank.
Ladies and gentlemen, Heather Fry, she is going to do her thing out on the streets.
Yep.
Today.
We're going to see who and what we can find.
All right.
Right, and you got the microphone and everything.
I do.
This is so cool. We tested it earlier.
Oh, excellent! Yeah, no, I'm excited. This is my fifth Pride, so it never gets old. It's so much fun. So I'm looking forward to it big time.
And this is actually only the second broadcast. Second,
yes.
And I guess now makes it the second annual.
And I feel very privileged to be a part of both, and you know, bringing it back to make it annual as it should be.
Yeah, I think so. And Marshall, the scary part is that you and I are kind of filling in for Stephanie Miller and John Fugelsang and Hal
Sparks. And Hal Sparks, yeah.
Do
you think there's a bit of a drop-off there?
No, I think it's an improvement.
I meant on their end.
Mm-hmm. Whatever you say, Mr. Novak.
Yeah, that's right.
I just want you to say that Stephanie's on.
That's the only time I'm going to say that to you today. Just
well,
know that.
No, and you know why you say that. Because it's my show right
well,
now.
Well, for the next
right.
5 minutes.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. It's your world for 5 minutes.
And as we said, the good news for you is that you're not, you don't have to use your SPF, you know, 45.
No, I am very excited about that because tanning is an inability for a natural redhead. There's about a 15-minute freckling period and we go straight to burn, and that was a concern of mine. I didn't want to be as red as some of the stripes on the flags out there today. So
yeah.
I did apply a little sunblock, but the overcast clouds is... I'm enjoying that, actually.
Yeah,
I am.
That's great.
Cool. I like your lei.
Thank you.
Heather's wearing a beautiful flowered lei.
We'll be giving them away with the WCPG van, which will be in the parade today. So it'll be coming down, and we'll have beads and rainbow flower leis and all sorts of goodies to
for
the crowd.
I want those colored balloons that I've been watching.
Yeah,
people
big bags.
Oh, some of them already. I've seen some of the most amazing costumes. People are putting on makeup. It's
wow.
it's like Halloween meets Mardi Gras meets, you know, the best day of summer ever. It's wonderful. It really is. Well, I should say it's like when Dorothy crash lands in Oz, because it's at the end of the rainbow and it's just amazing. And yeah, I've seen a naughty nurse. I've seen guys using like a trick magic balloons, if you will, to make their outfits. You know, those little balloons that you can twist into a puppy or an animal.
Oh, sure.
And they've made skirts and headdresses out of them. And it's just
gorgeous.
Quite
you know,
the spectacular.
Marshall and I, this is scary to say. We know people who actually twist balloons for a living.
I have a bigger confession. I used to twist balloons for a living.
Oh, my goodness.
Were any of you mimes?
Never.
I did do one gig as a mime.
All right.
Scary clown, scary clown, scary clown.
And I worked as a clown for many years.
And Marshall, I suggest you do your second gig as a mime this afternoon.
All right. I'll see if I can mime some puns.
it'll be quite the chore because the like I said earlier, it's a spectacular spectacle, Pride. It's just wonderful seeing people enjoy themselves and be who they are and run up and down the streets and have fun and not be ashamed. And I'm, again, proud to be a part of it 2 years running, at least with the station, 5 years whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Christy Weber, I hope, is going to be here. As I mentioned earlier, she'd be part of the broadcast.
Be quite patient. Maneuvering to our location was quite interesting. Again, I got to see so much, but there was a lot of bobbing and weaving involved.
Oh, really?
In getting here.
Well,
yes.
I was saying that because, as I mentioned earlier on the show, I believe she threw her back out a couple of days ago.
Ooh,
and we're trying
ouchie,
to see if, yeah.
Oh, I hope she feels okay.
I hope she feels okay, too. Maybe she's all, you know, she'll be on painkillers.
And
that'd be fun.
Do we have a panic button here that we can hit if she's on pain medication?
On Halstead, on Pride, I don't believe there's a panic button anywhere.
Well, it's up to Mike to get to the slider.
Just roll with it.
Uh-huh.
Dennis, you understand you're a failsafe there, buddy.
That's right. Dennis at the studio is the guy
Dennis
who's going to be.
Anchor. Thank you, Dennis, in advance.
Well, thank you.
Oh, sure. And and we are going to have our wonderful sponsors here in the booth as well, and some of them on the phone. And we're going to discuss, one of the issues we're going to discuss is that lawsuit, ACL.
Very cool. Yeah,
ACLU.
We have the original couple who started the lawsuit, one of whom is a Chicago police detective. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, we're going to have them in the booth. We're going to have a nice talk about that.
So, cool. Yeah. It's just going to be a lot of fun. So here's what you do, folks. This is the game plan. Meet the press is next. While you got it on in the background, go get your iced tea or your snack,
mm-hmm.
and then get ready to sit back and have some fun. Or if you're traveling someplace today, have us on. And if you're not here in person at the Pride Parade, you can be here in spirit. So come back in an hour, and we are going to have 3 hours. A lot of fun at the 2012 Pride Parade. Thank you so much. This is the Mike Novak Show. And as I always say at the end,
go green
or go home.